Now the next speakers are Stefan and Mark. I'd like to invite you to come up to the platform. Implicated since 2000 in computer safety, and the research and development, they are deploying research and development solutions, cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, algorithms, and integration in constrained environments. Orange Lab, one of them works for Orange Lab, working on artificial intelligence algorithms. So they're going to present their work. Cybersecurity.
Bonjour, merci pour.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for your welcome. Now, under this very long title that you have in front of you, what can I say? Oh, the gentleman is struggling with modern technology. You know, we talk about machine learning, says he somewhat ironically. So under this very long title, there is actually a bit of feedback from an experiment which was actually clearer to read. We started with nothing, and now we're in pre-production, and that's what we want to talk about today. This is all about AI and machine learning in one particular heart, and this is cyber defense, but not only and exclusively cyber defense. We're going to cover all of these subjects. I know that's a lot in a very short period of time. The ones in blue are more detailed in the article if you're interested. So we're going to go very quickly. Hang on. Why are we talking about this? We're in pre-production, but we think that there's a great deal of way to go. The road is very long, as you can see, and there's quite a corner at the end, but we're going to have to take that corner. What we'd like to do is get your feedback as well. I don't know if you're familiar with this kind of experience, so that we can have shared benefits and avoid future failures. So everything began 2 years ago for Orange Lab. We had our machine learning models, which were very supervised for our core business, obviously, and there was a certain amount of success in this field, so we decided, okay, we know how to do non-supervised. We're going to look at zero-D detection. That's the holy grail in terms of cybersecurity, and that's what we're looking at, cyber defense. We have to get success. That's our mission. That's our remit. So once we've said that, they said, okay, zero-D is of interest to us. We do have processes which allow us to do this contraction, and then we have processes which allow us to do something once we've detected IOCs. We looked at data exfiltration. This started 2 years ago. That's something we struggle with today. We can do it, but there's still problems attached. We struggle to detect virus propagation and everything that's the CD, the servers, and especially there's a real operational problem linked to false positives. We were a little disappointed with our super idea, of course. So that made us think what? It made us think of Bob Dorff. I don't know if you know him. I mean, he's an American entrepreneur who explains that through the business plan, it's just a fairy tale. And we were a little bit like a startup because we had this wonderful project. And what Bob Dorff was saying is, okay, we don't have the solution, but we also aren't familiar with the problems. And that was our problem. We had a real operational issue associated to everything linked to machine learning. So the idea was to do what? We had to look at all of the items, and we had to go through them. When you use them, you were able to converge and find the correct solution responding to the right problem. We have a team. We put together a very cross-cutting team. Now, you can see the slides are in the same way. You're going to have text. You're going to have a picture as well. All of my slides are the same. If you can't be bothered reading, you don't have to. Just read the bit in orange. That's the most important part. That the text today is really presents our vision for tomorrow, our project vision, which is not necessarily supported by orange. If the orange text means something to you, then we'd be delighted to discuss it with you. If you're going to fall off your seat, then we'd also be delighted to discuss this with you. So this was the first point. We had to get a team together. You need to have a cross-cutting team if you want to have a successful project, a multi-business unit. We were able to merge two data scientists, put them together, engineers, security experts, technical managers, a marketing specialist who came to join us recently. So you can see it's a very interesting team, and this allows us to cover the entire chain from R&D right up to the trade professional expertise, the professional, you know, sort of diagnosis. Do you know Anthony Goldblum? He's responsible for a data science hub on the internet, and he said that the data preparation is 90% of your time and machine learning is 10%, these training models. Now, those who work in machine models know that we spend very little time on the models. That's when the data is available. But when the data is not available, the picture changes. Getting the data, this is what we've seen anyway, is 90% of the time. We've spent ages trying to collect data to be able to use it. This is an essential point to bear in mind. The data recovery is complicated, and to that end, we have data generation algorithms for the user cases we studied earlier, sport scans, etc., data exfiltration, beaconing, and we use public data sets as a reference. Two in particular, which are very interesting, we got from the University in Canada, the Canadian Institute of Technology, two versions, so one from 2017 and one from 2018. And the idea was to use these public data sets for our resolutions and e-learning and our productions. These are not labeled productions as of yet. So we were going to use these ones, which were going to be labeled and used by our staff. We have a scientific officer who is one of the references, Baidu is anyway, one of the references in machine learning today on the planet, and he explained that they developed specific applications in order to get data for data recovery. The text as we see it is data collection takes a lot of time, it demands a great deal of resource, and we see this in orange. We're beginning to see people who can be specified to this management of the data, attack data, so that we can make it available for future teams and for future work, and particularly machine learning algorithms. We talk about 65%, 70% of the jobs that are going to exist in 2030, how they don't exist. Well, I think this type of profession, this type of job, is one to watch. I think it's going to come into its own. Now, how about data protection when you have data sets? Data, you have to then have, when you have data sets, you have protected data. You have to protect it. We've got four POCs today. We have four different protection techniques to do this. So there is a project which allows us to industrialize this shortly. Now, I'm going to hand over to my wonderful colleague and brilliant data scientist. Hello, everybody. I'm going to talk about algorithms that we were able to implement. In order to deal with the use case, we looked at cluster algorithms, in particular k-means, dubscan, dbscan. But we had quite a lot of false positives. And to try and understand the clusters sent up by the algorithms, we need to look at extra threat data. And what I can see in this type of algorithm, there are already products out there on the market, SetSetBI. Orange has invested in this. So this is a little bit on standby, if you like, from our side. We also implemented a certain number of statistical models, which are fairly effective in order to identify some kinds of attacks. We then were very much interested by the non-supervised algorithms. This is isolation forest, and the validation of this algorithm as a unsupervised algorithm is the result of the article. That's really the main point of the article. And we used a particular approach to do this, which involved comparing the results from random forest, from those from another, from the isolation forest with the random forest. To do that, we launched Random Forest on in the data set from the CIC, and this allowed us to have a fairly effective model. And we used this to benchmark our internal data set. At the same time, we launched Isolation Forest in our internal data set. So we found ourselves with having one side fed up by Random Forest, and on the other side, we had attacks fed up by Isolation Forest. And it was when we compared the two, we were able to see that Isolation Forest was very good for production. Now, we like these algorithms because the model is encoded in decision tree, and that makes it easier to interpret them, much easier than, for example, neural networks. Neural networks for which we have also kicked off some work using the data set from the CIC. As I said, the first step then was to manage to generate a model using Random Forest. And we could use this then to benchmark our data sets. At the beginning, the results were not fabulous, let's be honest. But we worked on this. We optimized our work using the number of trees and trying to oversample attack groups and also trying to undersample many things, all the benign details, the benign logs. So we were trying to create attack groups, create one different group, one class for DOS and web attacks. And all of this optimization work was done. And at the end of the day, then, we had results which were fairly good, actually, fairly promising. You can see we're fairly precise, except for one or two attacks. But this seemed sufficiently relevant for us and usable to benchmark our data set. With the model that we obtained using the CIC data set, we were able to benchmark our internal data set. And at the same time, we launched Isolation Forest on these data sets. So a parallel run of the algorithms. We looked at the results. We saw that they came to pretty much the same end. And using that principle, we were able to validate Isolation Forest as an algorithm for production. We also chose to concentrate on a certain number of features which haven't come out of Random Forest. During learning allows us to see what will be the future important elements, the elements, the discriminating elements. So we used this as a base, and we chose everything we wanted from that. That has some advantages. This allows us to have a model which is very portable. We have to have features which can be portable and can work with lots of different logs. And the second advantage is that working with a reduced number of features, our experts could give us feedback a lot more easily. Now, this feedback is extremely pertinent, it's paramount for us if we want to improve our algorithms upstream. So this is an extract of our comparative table, comparative between random and isolation forest. What you have to take from this are the four lines in gray. You can't really see them, I'm afraid. Random forest sometimes works better than isolation forest, but overall, the two algorithms give you the same files, and that allowed us to validate isolation forest. We started working on the networks, but we used a different approach here. With neural networks, the model is difficult to explain. And to offset this poor level of explanation, we try to use other algorithms like Isolation Forest to explain. So the idea is not to use it as a main detection tool, but rather as a support, a tool which is going to allow us to confirm or reaffirm results which are fed up by Isolation Forest. So I guess this would lead to the reduction of number of false positives. So these are the optimization works that were done on algorithms. We also implemented a recalibration algorithm, and this allows us to generate synthetic data for underrepresented classes. The results are promising. It's not completely finished or optimized, but I think we can envisage a use for this data, and we can use it also to detect myconing attacks or virus spreading, for which we don't necessarily have an excellent level of explanation today. Thank you. We have our data, our data is predicted, we have our algorithms. So what do we have to do? We have to go the last mile, and that's integration. It's not perhaps the easiest part of the equation. So we began to integrate everything at the SIEMS. These are the main tools which are used for SOC. It seemed easier for us. The SIEM collect all the data, so we might as well go and get it from the source. There are other APIs, but, you know, there's no problem of confidentiality. You don't have any data transfer. The transfer is there. You just have to use them. The data's there. Data integration, well, we're looking at Metron approach, which was an approach given to us by Cisco, like a BonSoc, open SOC, really, approach. So it's open source. You can manage all your infrastructure and all your IT system. Now, We had this idea to integrate Push-Mid-Hon with other solutions which allow us to manage data flows which are quite sizable. That's the second type of integration. And these two integrations have certain constraints, and that's why you had the very long title at the beginning. We were forced by both of them, to the Apache and by Radar, to look at things differently. And there's a third approach, Elastic. You know this. It's a CIEM trend. We saw that many of his clients used Elastic as a CIEM and not necessarily using it to the end for which it was created. Integration CIEM, then, what are we doing? Well, at the beginning it seemed like a good idea, and then we realized that we would have to have specific requests in order to adapt to the APIs with EPM and Radar. There were certain very serious constraints in terms of the architecture. You could only use 10% of the capacity, the app node. That's an extra machine then that comes to enrich and the heart of our machine. So now we have a bit more capacity, but we're still locked by the vendor. Corridor also uses some old technos. Corridor made us use version 6. As you can see, that's quite an old version. It's limited scalability, and it also has limited storage capacity. It doesn't mean it's not a good product, not at all. They're both very good products. Radar and Splunk work well. However, if you want to add your algorithms and machine learning to this, perhaps it's not the best solution. The second integration is the Apache Metron approach. It's a very nice solution. It works very well, very interesting. It's very good for spreaming. This is going to allow us to detect attacks very quickly. We work in batches as well. That's what we do with the CIEMs, or even with Elastic, actually. Now, we can actually think about maintaining this type of infrastructure using operations which are not used to this kind of solution. That could engender some very high costs. And thirdly, Metron uses a storm. So this implies what? It means there has to be involves specific developments if you want to have machine learning algorithms as a service. This allows us to have a scalability. It's very interesting on paper. However, we use Spark for this necessary redevelopment. It's interesting. It's on the roadmap, and we'll see how we go, because, as I said, it's not easy. I'm nearly finished, says the speaker. The last type of integration in which we're working is Elastic. We've put everything on Hadoop, and we realized that we didn't need Kibana anymore, which was very good. When anything that we can save, we reject into the IT system. We don't need any indexing, so we're getting the data, and we work them as we will. So we said, why not let's just take out Elastic and work on HDFS, which is a file storage system, which is very good, very effective. It's scalable. You've got a lot more space, low cost. The problem is that there's no real software. It all has to be developed. And our POC, or our solution, which is in pre-production, is limited, is to use HDFS, and that works pretty well. Lastly, in orange, and this could ensure is the backstory of Google, they're following pretty much the same lines, so that reassures us that we're working well, we can apply our algorithms on Stockinch, and we can do this at low costs. I have finished. That's my last slide. Future work, well, what's in front of us? We've got to have some feedback with Orange and obviously with you. If you have any ideas or any experience you'd like to share with us, we'll be delighted to discuss them with you. We are going to work on the Apache Metron, which we've already installed. We have two areas where this has been integrated completely. We want to take advantage of this for streaming. We've talked about this on paper, but we're working here in France trying to study experimentation on the live box. This is like the television box or the phone box. And we think this can give more value to our public if we can add machine learning to their box. You know, this is working close to our clients, but we have to make sure that no personal information escapes from the live box and gets onto the network. So there are constraints that we have to work at. We're working on optimization in this field. And something which gives us pushes us closer to IA. We're going to work on active learning. So our experts in cyber defense who are going to feed into the algorithm so that they can be more performing. And we hope that we're to find the grail, a second holy grail, if you like. And this is going to be the automatic reaction once the algorithms have detected an attack. I'm finished. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate. Thank you very much. I think we can give them a round of applause. Thank you, Mark and Stefan. Any questions? Thank you for this presentation. I have a question, maybe for the data science part. With the CIC data sets, did you have problems with labeling on some parts? As far as I can remember, no. Everything was labeled. Well, the two data scientists about which I spoke earlier, about whom I spoke earlier, are not present. But if you can give me your details, I'd be delighted to talk about that with you, because as you've noticed, you're talking about problems with the data sets, the labeling, yeah? Yeah, things that might just slide into the data set, yes. Well, thank you for the information. I think that's very interesting. And please leave me your details so I can perhaps discuss that with you. Hello. I wanted to know what type of log you have at the outset and what is the volumetrics? Well, dealing principally with proxy and firewall. And in pre-production, we are using an end client in the Sive, an end user in data science. So you're talking about 2,000 events per second per day. Have you detected something yet? We're in pre-production today, and we have been for the last 2 weeks. We hoped to have more results to show you. We're at the genesis of this installation, so it would have typical anomalies with the server and domains and all that, but no, we don't have any result. We need more analysis to be able to give you some results, or to confirm or not anomalies, and see whether the machines have a normal behavior pattern and can help us reassure our client with his algorithms. But I don't have anything to give you today, no, because like I say, we're in the incipient stages of the trial. Any other questions? Thank you for your presentation. I wanted to know if you thought about updating strategies for your algorithm, and if you have, what are the results, with which, how often are you going to put them in, and what do you use as your base in order to put this in place? Well, updates, manual or automatic ones? Well, what's your strategy? And maybe it could be one or the other. We talked about it at the beginning. We talked about active learning. Active learning is what it's, well, experts, as soon as the anomalies have been fed to them, are going to come and qualify them, say, yes, okay, this is good, or no, you're wrong. They can reintegrate this information into the process in learning, the deep learning. We have theoretical avenues for exploration that we haven't put into place. But the fact that we can update the algorithm, collecting updated data, is excellent, because the idea that we have is, and this is not automated, but we do it. We launch a process manually every evening with the updated data plus the data you already have. Your model is being constantly updated. Do you use all your past information, or do you say, as of a certain moment, the data is obsolete, so there's no point in going that far back? That's a good question. We haven't decided as yet. we're using HDFS, and this allows us to look at all the past information. But the day when things began to heat up and the algorithms aren't ready in the morning, perhaps at that juncture we will review our strategy. But we haven't decided on that as to that yet. We're still very novel at the moment. We're still, you know, in the pre-prod phase. But these are real questions and real strategies which we have to put in place. That's what I said. The end of this journey is very long because everything has to be put in place now. Maybe one more question? If I understood correctly, your detection strategy is I take a stock and I archive the day's logs, and in the evening I do the calculations. Would you perhaps envisage changing that strategy? You haven't talked about your algorithm strategy. Do you also use frameworks? So what is the strategy, which is an algorithm and the sovereignty of your algorithm, and your other strategy for detection? Do you think that you might pass it into real time plus reaction time, compiling something different to what you have today? Well, I had Python. Did you talk about Python for algorithms? No, we use Spark. Then with regards algorithm sovereignty, we're not inventing anything. We use existing, pre-existing algorithms. However, we develop them differently. The current use of them didn't exist, I believe. Apart from that, we don't have any sovereignty. Have we got into the source code of Spark? Oh, a little bit, I suppose, but not much. If we'd got into the source code, then we would have said there were perhaps problems, and we didn't do that. There's maybe a risk there. We have got a register of private codes between the different labs around France. Well, I think we're working in a trusted environment. We're not going to resolve all the problems at once, let's face it. And lastly, perhaps I omitted to say it. I'm sorry, the interpreter cannot hear the question. Are we going to try and change the calculations to doing it several times per day? I'm afraid I don't have the answer. It's only through practice that we're going to have answers. We have to see how things work. You know, we can't move ahead with false positives. We have to calibrate our thresholds so that it's perfectly tuned. So it's too early for me to give you any definite answers on that front. Last question, please, here at the front. Hello. Thank you for your presentation. I think there's an open question, and you haven't got very much experience in this, obviously, because you're at the beginning of the journey, but this is related to machine learning and to see whether eventually there could be a finely tuned detection level which would allow us to find what's happening in a client's abnormal activities with our clients. I was thinking particularly about OpenTest. If the goal of machine learning could detect that in OpenTest, could this be Could this be native to the deep learning? What you're saying is then, is machine learning going to be able to detect the activities of OpenTest? Well, it's a good question. There are pen tests which are launched by clients without people in SOC actually knowing, so obviously we have to be able to detect them. We're still in the early stages to be able to respond. But these are subjects with which we're going to have to deal. Yes, thank you. Okay, I think it's time to thank our speakers, Stefan and Mark.